extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Extra Time. I've got a couple of MLS's finest alongside me. We got Kaelin Carr. We got Sasha Kleshtin. I'm your host, Tom Bogert, stepping into the big chair for Andrew Wiebe and usual deputy David Goss. There's a big responsibility in this chair, boys. I get to decide if I want to monologue for a long time. If I want to keep dribbling, I could. I don't have to pass it, but I'm going to pass it. I'm going to have to keep this up so Anders doesn't come here and drag me out. What's up? How you doing, Sasha?
Sounds like you just read that. Were you reading?
I was reading, yeah. I don't have the Wiebe touch.
Who wrote that? Did Wiebe write that for you?
ChatGPT wrote that?
No, Wiebe, that would have. I would have actually been monologuing if Wiebe wrote me that. There would have been a couple lists in there.
I was going to say Tom has the ChatGPT stash as well, but it's strong. Hey, we got it in here. We're here.
Hold on. How does it feel that you're outnumbered by mustaches right now? You're the weird one. It's not us.
That's
a good usually
point.
Us.
That's fair.
He pulled back on that one really quickly. Pulled back on that real quick. How you doing? How you tired from these match nights? These midweek match nights? All the travel?
No, I'm good. Attaboy. Good to go.
Fresh.
Jacked up. Ready to go. Congested schedule. No problems here. This means more minutes. I'm ready for the minutes.
More opportunities. No training.
This is the first time Kaelin and I have been teammates since about 2005.
Mm.
PDL Summer League.
Did you do that?
Do we have a good story,
Tom,
here?
Did you get that scoop?
Do you know the scoop?
We can take it offline and then I'll pretend like sources rather than you guys just saying
it. No, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Do we have one story? Come on.
Orange County Blue Star squad.
Who's
amazing
better?
Amazing squad.
After that 2005 team, we had like four or five guys in the super draft. Me, Kaelin, Kai Kamara. Who else was on that
Jordan
team?
Jordan Harvey.
Who's the best player on that
team? Kennedy. Tyson Wall.
Who was the best player
on that team?
Team,
yeah. Not now, not in careers. In 2005, on that team, who was the best player?
Hmm.
I feel like Kai scored a lot of goals.
Yeah.
He was pretty consistent up there.
I heard his name. I felt about
it. Jordan Harvey was always good, too.
Yeah.
Like, this is deep cut. This is exactly what Andrew Wiebe or David Goss would have
won. We went undefeated 17-0, lost in the national semifinals of PDL to Des Moines Menace, who are now a rival of the Peoria Carps, my squad. Up the Carps. But Andy Grunbaum was the goalkeeper there and stood on his head that game. He had like 17 saves. It was insane crowd.
Crazy upset.
Should we get him on the show?
We should get it. Yeah. Yeah.
Anders, what do you think? Keep going on this?
Give him his love at least.
All right. That was a busy time, and we've had a busy day, busy match weeks in MLS. We had Wednesday night a full schedule. We had LAFC losing 2-1 to Lyon in leg one of the CCL final. We'll get to that a little bit later. Let's go with the best thing you guys saw on match day 16. We're starting with you, Kaelin.
Well, I was just in DC. I had to think about that for a second. But yeah, I was just in DC, and it was 2 goals in 2 minutes for Montreal coming back. DC had complete control of the match, came out in a much better way. I think Wayne Rooney's comments to his team coming off the Toronto FC match where he said he wanted to take all 11 players out at halftime probably got them focused, at least to start the match. But it was actually a lack of focus that let Montreal back into it. Full credit to them. But quick throw in, Ariel Lassiter gets it in, substitution to Senesi Ibrahim with the goal. And then actually it's reversed on the other side where Ibrahim gets behind Pines, finds it across to Lassiter, who it's playing a wingback position. New for Losada and him, but big result for Montreal, and it gave a little bit of excitement to that one because it looked like it was over for DC. They had full control and let their foot off the gas.
That one ended 2-2. Sasha, what do you got?
I just got a comment on that game last night. We're watching on MLS 360. You know, there's 8-9 games all happening at once, and we were tuned into a different game, and we caught out of the corner of our eye Montreal celebrating and celebrating hard. And I was thinking, but you're down 2-1. And I look up and it says 2-2. And I'm like, we've missed an entire goal that happened here. And we ran it back. We saw both goals within a minute. That was just wild because DC looked like they were in total control up to that point.
Yeah, they were cruising, right, Kim?
Yeah, no, Benteke, you know, Cudi Pietro gets another big one coming in. I really like him as a young player. Just like he's got 3 goals so far this season, but they've all been really important ones. He has that technical ability, and you know DC at times looks a little bit predictable. He's kind of the one that goes a little bit off script. And then I think the personality for just being 21 years old Wayne Rooney's not been afraid to play young players, but he's been the one that he's been most consistent with. And then on top of that, I think the fact that they brought in more experienced players like a Lewis O'Brien, like a Click, these guys that can maybe carry at the beginning of the season, it was a lot of young players at once for DC. Now it's like one at a time. You bring in Fletcher, which makes it easier, I think, platform for these young guys to find success.
Yeah, I think you're right. Sasha, best thing you saw?
Best thing I saw was Carlos Hill shutting up the crowd 20 seconds in. It's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Everyone's ready for this big midweek match. 20 seconds in, crowd goes silent. And then we just see a wild game for the next 90 minutes. Miguel Berry scores a golazo off the bench, doing his best Yakumakis impression to be the number nine down there. And then Carlos Hill again in the 93rd minute makes Mercedes-Benz go silent again. It was fantastic. Before the game, we spoke to Taylor Twellman. He said Carlos Hill, if he stays at the New England Revolution for the next few years, will become the best New England Revolution player of all time. And last night was one of those games where it cements that. He's so good, does everything so well. Every time he receives the ball and looks forward, you're just thinking, Atlanta or whoever, what are you doing not man-marking this guy? You got to make him dribble. You got to make him make plays, because when he has time and space and can look up, he will kill you. And he was awesome last night.
Couple things from that. One, you would say, take him off of his left foot. They did. He scored with his right foot. Yeah. That was a collector's item. He might have should have gotten two for that.
I also like just his personality, like at the end when he was telling everyone to be quiet, the same way he started the match. But you don't necessarily think of Carlos Hill as that type of guy who's going to kind of get really upset. But, you know, if you think about it over time, there was a couple times he went off on the media around, I think it was the snow match some years ago. Yeah. He's like, what is this? And it's just like, there's this other side to him that comes out every once in a while. You're like, okay. And, you know, New England really needed that. They're, you know, they've been struggling. A lot of injuries for me, Dylan Barrero being gone, being the biggest, because he was kind of their X factor. Mm-hmm. And I think they only had 28% percent possession in this match against Atlanta United. So, you know, had to get the turnovers and a late one, really needed someone to grab the game. And, you know, having him back, you can see how he's able to rescue them.
I've got
to
say, I've been very surprised by the play of Emma Boateng in place of Dylan Barrero.
Awesome.
He's been awesome. The bigger loss for me is Brandon Bye right now. When him or DeJuan Jones are not on the field, it's just a totally different team. The fact that they can attack so much from their outside back spots, they just lose so much in the attack when Brandon Bye or DeJuan Jones are not out there right now.
Yeah, and that gives them the flexibility going wide, because Dylan Barrero was their most dangerous wide player, and even he would kind of pinch into the half spaces and play like a second forward a little bit. With those two fullbacks, it's a luxury that you don't necessarily need that wide play. So Emma Boateng, with his form recently, that assist was really nice. Like, that has been really crucial for New England, even as they're slipping a little bit.
Bobby Wood, too.
We're watching a game that Brad Guzan was starting, that Emma Boateng assisting Bobby Wood, and there's a couple jokes. No, it's not 2017. Like, these are all kind of key players from this game. It was good fun. It probably made you guys happy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Bobby Wood has been very good, I think. But some of it's the balance. I don't know if we're planning on digging too far into New England, but we're here now.
This is it. It's now or never.
I mean, Weeby's not here, so we get to run muck. No offense, Tom. But I think...
trust me.
No, man. We're going to do this. No, but some of it is the balance, too, because when you don't have those pieces, you start to shift. And that's, I think, what Bruce Arena has had to do. So Noel Buck has moved up a little bit further. Honestly, he's shown his quality near around goal, where he has that ability to play that position. I still feel like he's probably better as a dual six. And then you have Carlos Hill, or, you know, having him back is the big one. But Latif Blessing has been pushed up at times, too, and used in different spots. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when one thing breaks almost on a car, you start to having to, like, plug different pieces in. Barrero, for me, dragged players. He could go outside one-on-one or come inside and then allow those fullbacks to really get forward in the attack. And Boateng's been really good, but it's a little bit more predictable. He's gotten to the spot. It's been effective. Same with Bobby Wood. But I think that's just sort of X factor, where you're waiting for somebody to do something different or come up with something creative. Now that really just falls on Carlos Hill, and unless it's Noel Buck, because he's done a couple moments like that too.
So real quick on Noel Buck, he's had his breakout season. He didn't go with the U-20s to the U-20 World Cup. I'm not sure if New England would have released him. I don't know if he was really in necessarily starting plans. He's better off starting and playing games in New England if he was going to be on the bench at the U-20 World Cup. With his UK passport, there have already been English teams that had been tracking him. Tottenham wanted to bring him on trial. Tottenham had interest in the past. That's kind of no longer. Probably because he's not going to be cheap enough, and they can't spend on whatever number that he's kind of playing himself into right now. Like, this is a kid that there is a lot of English interest kind of swirling around him, and he's one to watch. I don't think that they would lose him in the summer, but is it possible that they agree a deal for the summer that goes through in the winter? This is one to watch.
He's a good player. Been really fun to watch. The biggest compliment I can give to a young center midfielder is just the fact that they don't look out of place. Mm-hmm. And he does not look out of place at all. He doesn't look overwhelmed by things. The game doesn't seem to be happening too fast for him, which you often see with young center mids trying to process everything that's happening around them, and then has scored a couple of good goals. Of course, the one in Miami didn't count, but that was a banger. He showed technical skill to get it back onto his left foot. And the goal he scores last week at home is absolute smash from 25 yards. So he's, sky's the limit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be in a rush to move if I were him either, because you feel like he's growing still. You can see every game getting a little bit more confident, even his range of passing. I've gotten to do a couple of Revs games and talk to him. And, you know, he doesn't seem like he's getting too far ahead of himself either. He's talking about who he watches as far as Polster. He's got some good partners to be able to kind of mold himself after, but he has a little bit more to his game that I think maybe even he realizes. You can see him kind of discovering that, where he's like, oh, I can cut this guy here, or I can find this, I can just pull up from here. I think he even had a quote after his banger where he's like, if you give me space, I don't know if he meant to say it, but he's like, if you give me space, I'm going to take it. But I think he's still discovering a little bit of what he has, and Bruce Arena as well too, but he's definitely earned his place.
One quick note on Atlanta. It's not a serious point, but it was probably my favorite thing from last night. Not just the golazo that Miguel Barry scored, and it was an awesome goal. It was, this man has not scored in, I think, 33 games was the stat. He had his celebration ready to go, and that is the kind of confidence I want to bring into the studio.
What was he, flipping pancakes?
I think so. I loved it, though. I loved the sauce, all of that. That, it's unfortunate that moment's going to get lost, because that wasn't the game winner that ended up being
the waffle.
I mean, it's also absurd that Atlanta leads the league in scoring and leads the league in goals against. That's just, you tune in every week.
Extremely watchable.
We also said on the show last night that the most must-watch TV in MLS right now is a free kick outside the box for Atlanta. Because Thiago Almada standing over the ball is like, we have to tune in and watch this now, because he's putting everything on target. He's got three already, hit the crossbar last night on one. The guy's sick.
I also love that turn he had, and then the toe poke. Mm. Sick. Just, you know, in tight spaces, be able to like sense where that space is behind him. And then anytime you get a toe poke, for me, that's like, I'm going to get to my Longwane takes later. But yeah, if you can get a toe poke goal for me, that's like,
The movement that he made before he received the ball too, he ran forward to push his defender off, almost checked back, and then that no touch turn, and then the acceleration to beat the defender, get the shot off the guy.
Yeah, because sometimes that you would say, okay, well, when everything's in front of him, and at times he drops deep to be able to facilitate and find those balls in behind, but you would say if he turns his back on you, that's the time you want to press. From a defensive perspective, and then you see, oh, wait, no, don't do that.
I don't think there's ever a time to press. I'd be terrified.
Yeah.
Defender's nightmare. So,
okay,
yeah.
We've scattered on and on about our stuff. What was your biggest moment of the night?
You tee me up. Lucho Acosta, a golazo at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Pinged it into the top corner. Lucho has been one of the very best players in the league this season. He's been one of the best players over the last two seasons. You know, Hany Mukhtar is obviously MVP and playing extremely well currently over this two-year run, but Lucho, I think, is right up there with him. FC Cincinnati beat NYCFC 3-1 on the road. That was a very difficult place to play. NYCFC's home form is always good, even though they've had a little bit of a downturn in form, to kind of put it lightly. That's still a difficult place to go. That's another test passed by FC Cincinnati. They've proved that they can win 1-0. They've proved that they can win 3-2. They've had a couple blowouts. Everything's kind of coming together for this FC Cincinnati group, who are atop the Supporters Shield standings and set a record last night for most points through 15 games in a season in MLS history, excluding the shootout era.
So if Lucho continues this, and let's say FC Cincinnati win the Supporters Shield, you still think Hany Mukhtar gets it? If both continue at about the same level, maybe Hany has maybe better statistics at the end of this, but the best player on the Supporters Shield winner, you don't think he gets it?
Yeah, and I would say, so I was just saying, just based on the last, say, season and a half, I think it'd be disrespectful to not mention Hany, particularly because MVP last year and what he's already been doing this year. But Lucho is absolutely...
Should have been the MVP in 2021.
It's kind of there with you.
2.5 years straight he has been... Sorry, I'm like so hard on the Hany Mukhtar train. He was robbed in 2021.
Carlos Seal? This is the same argument.
This is the same argument.
It's the same argument because
Carlos Seal won the Supporters Shield.
The best team points record. Yeah. And he was the maestro pulling the strings on everything.
But it's most valuable player. It's not best player on the best team. And there's no player in the league over the past 2.5 years that is more valuable to their team than Hany Mukhtar.
Have you seen the Revs without Carlos Hill?
Have we see what
LAFC earlier this year?
But we haven't seen Nashville without Hany Mukhtar.
Okay. So it's an imagine that would not
we can't compare just yet. But I'm with you. I love Carlos Hill. I love Lucho Acosta, and Cincinnati has been great. It's just we could argue about this all season long.
I'm sure we will. Yeah. Tune in extra time.
Yeah. I agree that just as far, that's the crazy part to me about Hany Mukhtar is you know that where it's coming from. Like, you know, if you're playing against Nashville every week,
just stop like that guy.
Hey, this guy is the guy. He's going to hurt you. You can't let him in open space. Anytime they're going to sit back, going to find first pass forward. Dax is going to look directly to him and then watch out. But every time he continues to find the moment, which is even more impressive.
It is more impressive.
But at the same time, I still feel like if you're setting points records, if you're winning the supporter shield, and if you're the key cog that makes it all click, it's hard to punish a player for, you know, having the nice pieces or having a Barrial or having...
I agree. I'm with you. Winning is the most important thing. I'm totally with you. The thing about Lucho Acosta that has impressed me the most in the past 2 weeks has been his leadership. Now, he doesn't speak a lot, but his actions in the past 2 weeks...
He was on 360, wasn't he?
Lucho Acosta?
He was on the post. He was on the wrap-up, I saw him.
Oh, was he?
Speaking English with the crew, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to interview this guy.
Yeah,
but his actions have spoken massive to me. The way that he pressed in Hell is Real, the way that he basically single-handedly pressed the goalkeeper, win that ball, set up the game-winning goal, and then yesterday giving the penalty to Brandon Vasquez, trying to get his young striker off the mark with a penalty. And that was a big moment in the game. It was 2-1 at that point. Mm-hmm. That penalty needed to be made, and he gave the confidence to his young striker, get his goal, selfless. I like that. Everything he's doing is awesome.
Lucho also did miss a penalty earlier this year.
True.
Against Petrovic. But it's also probably going to hurt his case for MVP, those stats, right?
And he knows that too, right? Like, I'm not exactly sure if that's going through his head in that second, but you know that all these goals are going to count no matter what the situation is. All right, cool. Penalty. I'm on penalties. I'm the man for this team. I take the penalties. And no, he gave it to Brandon Vasquez. Yep. That's a sign of a leader. And again, that won't show up in the stats, and this sounds like a very sports radio argument, but that show won't show up in the stats, and that's so key and so crucial to everything that Lucho's been. He went from, you know, in DC, he started to become a leader when Wayne Rooney was there as a player, and then he lost a little consistency when Rooney left, and then he went to Mexico. He's come back. He's an absolute leader. He's an absolute consistent player. Like, he is an elite player in this league, and again, he's leading FC Cincinnati in the Shield race. They are 8 points ahead of Nashville in second, but the Philadelphia Union, here they come. They beat Charlotte FC 1-0 at home. Is the Shield race on? I know we're early enough. We're getting near the halfway point. Philly are 9 points adrift FC Cincinnati, and LAFC have a whole lot of games in hand because of CCL and everything, so don't discount them. But this is kind of how the Shield race is shaping up.
You would have to put Nashville in there,
yes,
just based on their form, but I don't know if they can keep it up over the course of a season. I just the amount of pressure that is put onto Hany Mukhtar, like Kalen said, that the focus of the other teams will be on him all game long. And I just don't, I'd be dumb to say he can't keep it up because he's done it for 2.5 years, but it's so hard to keep that up with when teams game planning against you. Philly for me is a contender. They're in form. They're looking like the Philly of last season. Most importantly, Jim Curtin has talked about getting back to basics. He says, I want 35 yards between my strikers and my center backs. We need to be tighter in the midfield, harder to play against. And they're not giving up as many goals as they were beginning in the season. And now it's Gazdag, Uwa, and Carranza hitting their stride again, getting their goals, getting their assists. That front three has been dominant lately. I think they're definitely a Shield contender.
What about you, Cam?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people were concerned, rightly so, because we've seen what CONCACAF Champions League can do to teams in the past, Seattle going all the way, but even New York City, teams that go further in CCL tend to have a big drop-off, which is partly why what LAFC have done is so insane to me. The fact that they've just continued. I mean, Bwanga's top of the Golden Boot leading and
both competitions.
Yeah, playing less matches than anyone else. And so I think that was the concern, and it made sense with Philly. And I think also a little bit of that hangover, right? Even starting, coming off of the way they lost in MLS Cup, starting the season, I've seen teams, and I know what that feels like, sadly, to lose in a final and how difficult it is to just turn around after a long season and then come back and try and pick up that same form. And then to go out in the Open Cup the way they did, to go out in CCL the way they did. But in a way, they've kind of just like, it's almost been a relief where they're just saying, all right, now we're just going to focus on the season. And you can see that focus. They've made a couple of changes. I think they've gone three in the back at times. It kind of doesn't matter. Those wing backs, Baizo and Wagner, are so good at getting forward anyways that they don't always need that protection. But I think Lowe's been good coming in. And then without Bedoya, McGlynn gone with the U20s. So they've had to shift things around a little bit. But Carranza, I think for me, I only saw he's 23 years old. Argentine, like, he's another guy. I don't know, Tom, if you heard anything, but he's got to be another guy that clubs across Europe have to be looking at.
Yeah, so I was going to ask how we thought the summer transfer window was going to play into it for all of these teams, both in incomings and departures. But to answer your Julian Carranza question, yes, like Europa League level teams, I've been told, are calling or are checking in. There's been no official offers, but the interest is there. He's really on their radars. I'd be pretty surprised if Philly let him go at this point and if things kind of advanced so quickly. But Philly have proven that they'll sell kind of at the right number or at the right stage of careers for players. So on that, just
what would be like a comp for him? Like what about, like, I know Tati Castellanos is another young player transferred, similar,
probably a little less, but NYCFC were asking for $15 million for Tati and they never got it. That's why he went on loan to Girona, and they'll kind of reassess this summer with what happens. But yeah, I mean, something in the like $8 to $12 million range, right? Depending on incentive. Like Brenner's deal was $10 million plus a sell-on percentage plus some add-ons. That feels about the ballpark for Julian Carranza. Again, it all depends on, even with Brenner, like and any other player, prices can be different. Deals can be different depending where you go. If you go to, say, a Belgian team that's likely to sell on a player, maybe you take a lower upfront fee and a bigger sell-on percentage. If you're selling to the Premier League, you're assuming that's the destination, so we need to get all the money up front, rather than kind of putting it in add-ons or incentives and selling percentage. So yeah, that's one big question for the summer transfer window for some of these Shield contenders. Elsewhere with Philly, Kai Wagner, he could be on the move. His contract's up at the end of the season. That could be something that happens. Olivier Mbiazo is another player that is definitely being called about. And then for Cincinnati, they've already sold Brenner. Brandon Vasquez has plenty of interest, but I don't think that they would let him go this summer. I think that would be a winter thing. And they still have an open DP spot and a U22 initiative to add to this group. Nashville SC have an open DP spot that they're going to use on a forward at the beginning of the summer. LAFC seem to always have room to figure it out, that they're very good at cap gymnastics and moving things around, and Cifuentes might be leaving and they could bring some things in. So how do you guys think that the summer transfer window is going to impact the Shield race?
The summer transfer window, if we had to give like a positive or a negative, I'd say for Philly and Cincinnati potentially could be a negative with...
I disagree just on Cincy, but go on.
Disagree on Cincy, okay. But just the fact that they have players, younger players that could potentially want to be on the move, could potentially be transfer targets, where I think LAFC, minus Cifuentes, who it sounds like is going to Rangers, have mostly players that are settled there. Buonga's there to stay.
Right.
Carlos Vela's there to stay. Opoku could be one. Seems settled there. The midfield, Sanchez, Tillman has just arrived. Acosta is there. Aaron Long has just arrived. Like, the rest of that team seems like it's staying intact. So for the supporter Shield, I think the transfer window helps LAFC the most.
Yeah, and potentially for Nashville too, right? Because Hany Mukhtar's not leaving. The rest of that lineup looks pretty much locked in. And then you think of adding that designated player piece. You'd hope that they could go out and do it. I think maybe a little bit gun shy after Ake Loba and having that failure, but okay. Good to hear. Tom, that's what we got you.
Oh, Tom. That.
It's just like speculation. It's like, no, we got scoops. Don't worry. Yeah, but I think, you know, once they add, that could potentially take them to the next level. And we talk about how scary Hany is because he's been the only option. Now, imagine that partner, right? Mm-hmm. You see, at times, I think they've been able to do a good job with Teal Bunbury, CJ Sapon, guys that have done the job to basically, at times, just create some sort of partner or someone to bump the ball off of. And they found some goals as well. But you think about somebody else where it's like, oh no, you have to watch out for this one. Like, this is a Buonga, or it's that type of person that can open up and run in space as well too. That's kind of scary to see. I think the Cincinnati one worried me a little bit, not so much because, and I trust all your information, all that, but there's just something different from a player's perspective when you're in a locker room and you see one guy get his deal. Brenner, I don't know exactly. It didn't sound like he handled it necessarily always the best. And then you're saying, well, I'm being a good, you know, teammate here at all times, and I'm waiting for my turn, and clubs are after me. There's interest. That chatter has been in my ear. And now I want my chance to go do that. So I think that's a lot to manage. And overall, when I think at MLS and how it's changed, like the windows have gotten so much shorter for these teams where Cincinnati might, you know, if they add a piece, and I would imagine the way they've gone out and ID'd talent so far, you'd imagine they'd go out and have been planning for Brenner's move and to be able to bring somebody else in. But I think there's just that extra little bit. We saw it with LAFC for a while where they were planning on making moves before COVID. That changed the market, threw things off. Now they had to rebuild. You think of the way New England was decimated,
right,
moving a lot of players, even not at maybe the top end, but Montreal having guys hit, suddenly you don't really have a succession plan. And so I think that's a tricky one. It makes it harder to evaluate a season as far as projecting, because the teams might look different as things go on. Barrial's another one. I'm sure at some point will be interest, you know, coming from him based on his profile, age, all that. So I think Cincinnati have built a nice little lead, and without Brenner, without hitting their top form, that's pretty scary if you think about it.
It's still pretty scary to think about.
Yeah, my Cincy argument here is I think the group that's here is here. Like, again, Brandon Vasquez, I think it's much more likely that they agree a deal that goes through in the winter than it is selling him now. I think that Vasquez would understand it. It's you can't really sell both of your star strikers in the middle of a season. So I think that that's understandable, and I think that there's going to be, you know, some cooperation between the both sides of, you know, stick around a little longer. Hey, mate, hopefully we'll get a deal set right now, so you don't have to worry about it anymore. Your future set, you know where you're going, but we also get to keep you.
It helps when you're winning too.
Yes, exactly.
You got a real chance. Hey, we're going to add a piece. This is who the piece is. Going to partner with them. Lucho's giving you the rock. That's going to help to have a little bit of patience.
And one more point before we wrap up here is that Barrial, you're right, he's definitely going to be somebody who should be on European radars. I'm sure he is. He just signed a new contract, and I don't even think it goes into effect until next season. So we'll give you a new contract. Lucho Acosta has an option year for next year. I'm sure that there's going to be more serious talks about a contract, but he's kind of settled throughout the rest of the season. Yerson Mosquera, he's on loan, but there's an option to extend the loan. But yeah, I think that they're going to pick that up. He's been really, really great. Miazga just got here, and Woboda just got here. Like, all of their key players are kind of set. And again, they're doing this without a DP. They're going to add this summer. They have the U22 initiative. I've reported Serbian youth international striker Peter Ratkov is somebody that they're looking at, and he's kind of like a proper center forward, more in the Brandon Vasquez mold. And then they'll probably use that young DP spot on a more dynamic attacker, whether it's a center forward or somebody who can maybe play a little wide, a little bit.
Do they have Baji locked up? Is he locked down?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And Ray Gaddis. So they're good. What else? What more do you need?
We can't mention. Yeah, shout out to Ray. Veteran tuck, absolute legend. can't not mention Don Baji, but you really can't. Like, he's been very good coming in.
Yeah,
he's stepped up massively since Brenner has gone out, and Sergio Santos had a bit of an injury. So yeah, well done, Don Baji.
The big difference. The big difference for me with Cincy though is still the back line. I think last year they gave up 56 goals, which was the most for a playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
But sorry, not to cut you off, but that was a different team. That was Woboda got there in mid-April, and then Miazga got there in the summer. After when those two players were starting, they were good defensively.
Right.
So it wasn't, you know, there was beginning of the year that I think they gave up like 8 goals to Montreal over 2 games. Like, that wasn't happening by the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're comparing the full season. So they definitely made a huge difference in that. Now adding it, and I think Mosquera coming in has taken it to another level, just because I think Pat Noonan, I talked to him in the before match day one, and he said, we want to get younger. Mm-hmm. We want to get more athletic. You had some players that were coming in, but that mobility wasn't quite there. And Mosquera's, he always plays like right on that edge where you're worried, is he going to make a mistake? Is he going to run through somebody? But he's gotten it right for the most part. And I think that partnership with Miazga, you know, even when I was just doing the Benteke match in DC last night, I was thinking about the best team that I've seen go up against him, and it was the two of them, because physically they can handle any matchup, but also now they have the mobility a little bit to help. And you're right, Woboda has been huge as well too.
Yeah, so the other end of the table, so since you're at the top, towards the bottom we have the LA Galaxy, who beat Real Salt Lake 3-2 on the road. Do we have a new president bump, fellas? This was the first game that the LA Galaxy played after parting ways with President Chris Klein. It's a step in the right direction in terms of result. They are now tied for last place in the West instead of just last place in the West, now with 12 points after 15 matches. Still only 6 points below the playoff line. What do we make of the Galaxy here?
to be determined. I've been saying every week, every team that has a big win and they're all excited. Yeah, great. Now back it up next week, right? Don't just drop down in the dumps again. They had a massive win against LAFC's C team, let's be honest, in the Open Cup. But it meant a lot to the LA Galaxy to get that win. And then they backed it up with a home loss to Charlotte. And it's all that good energy was just tossed right back in the trash. Now, it will be interesting to see when the LA Galaxy get to play at home again on June 21st.
It's a long way away.
But the supporters group said they were not coming to the stadium anymore because of Chris Klein. They wanted him out. And the energy in the stadium was dead. The players felt it. You could see that there was an anxiety within that team playing at home with really bad results this season. So the fan supporters groups have said they're coming back to the stadium now on June 21st. I'm interested to see what that atmosphere will be like. You know, but if Galaxy doesn't keep winning games, more changes will be made, most likely. And they've got two tough away games coming up. They play at Salt Lake next Wednesday or Tuesday in the Open Cup quarterfinals, and then they go to St. Louis to play away from home again. Tough games. So it's very intriguing to watch right now at the LA Galaxy.
Wait, so Sash, I want to ask you, because, you know, Tom was talking about a front office bump, which I haven't heard of that one yet. But I mean, with all the distractions going around the team, from my experience, I've never really had a ton of interaction with the front office. It's more just a nuclear team. Do you think this is something that will have been felt within the locker room, within the Galaxy?
I think it will be felt just because of the fan support that was not there in the stadium, because they really wanted Chris Klein and Jovan Karofsky out. Those were the two guys they were saying, we're not coming back to the stadium unless these guys are out. And now they're saying we're coming back and we're going to be there in the stadium. So I think the players are just going to be a little bit excited, because they had openly spoken about, like, listen, we want our fans in the stadium watching us. They help the team. They give you energy in a close game. Of course, they went away from home and had a good reaction, which I don't think there's any correlation there. That's why I'm just so interested to see that first home game, what it will be like back in the...
It comes at a good time, too, because that Open Cup match is a knockout match. So I think if you have that... that kind of energy, we saw them respond in the same way to LAFC against their C team. Yes, important asterisk, but hey, you got to take what you can get at this point. Find some footing. I think playing in another knockout stage, which right now, honestly, playoffs aren't guaranteed. So if you can get closer against Real Salt Lake and then carry that home, it gives you at least a platform. Anecdotally, I do have a buddy who I played club soccer with, who's a Galaxy fan. He told me he bought like three jerseys and multiple tickets and is going to the next match. So I don't know. Shout out to Bernal.
Was it anybody from this 05 team?
No. This is like old club teammate. He actually played with Wando and I in club soccer growing up, but he's a diehard Galaxy fan. He's been blowing up my text messages forever. And I'm, I don't know. He's back in the stadium. So
will Ricky Pooch do the Messi celebration if he scores in the Open Cup against an 18-year-old again?
Probably.
I can't wait for the next El Trafico, because LAFC...
July 4th!
I mean, I sat at that LAFC Galaxy game with Aaron Long and a few other LAFC players sitting around us.
I forgot you don't live in New York.
I don't. I
behind enemy lines with LAFC players from the former LA Galaxy midfield.
I was just friends with Aaron Long and hadn't seen him in a long time, and he wasn't playing. So, we watched the game together. And, I mean, we were in shock to see what Ricky Pooch did. It's just... Do that in a real game against Aaron Long and Chiellini. Game. You know, no, not a. Of course, it's a real game, and it meant a lot to the Galaxy for sure. But boy, do the LAFC players have a chip on their shoulder now, and they're going to kick the crap out of Ricky Pooch next game. That's for sure. So he better be prepared. And he seems to wiggle out of everything anyway. Yeah. But trust me, they're coming after him next game.
Aerodynamic.
He's put a target on his back.
He's aerodynamic.
Literally, just held up his shirt. Yeah. In case you forget, this is the name, this is the number, come get me.
Next Wednesday, the LA Galaxy are on the road at Real Salt Lake in the quarterfinals of the Open Cup. Real Salt Lake are down pretty bad, too, with this loss. The fans, one person hit us up in our mentions. Wait, does this mean we're the worst team in the league now because we lost to the Galaxy, who are no longer at the bottom of the standings, thanks to a tiebreaker? That's Colorado Rapids right now. Then they go on the road to play St. Louis before that home game on the 21st against Sporting Kansas City. The fan discontent and everything else that's kind of gone around the Galaxy, it's been part of the Galaxy story this season, that's kind of popping up a little bit at a couple of different clubs. So there's been videos of the LA Galaxy fans and Greg Vanney and the players kind of having discussions after the game and not happy ones from the supporters of chanting, you know, we want better. There was a moment last night where James Sands, NYCFC captain, was speaking with unhappy NYCFC fans at the stadium. Matt Pollard asked us, particularly at Sasha and Kalen, two big moments of recently of players engaging with supporters after tough losses. Is this a new trend in MLS? Is this something players talk about doing, or is it spontaneous? Is it productive, or are you opening yourself up to an ugly interaction?
I would say I'm always surprised to see the impact that the fans have had. I mean, we've talked about on this show a lot, players using their voices, which I've always, of course, been in supportive of for whatever it is, taking matters into their own hands and speaking about what they care about, what they're passionate about. And we're seeing fans doing that as well more and more and actually having more of an impact. So I've been surprised to see the fans being able to actually get some control, not control, but getting an ear and make some, you know, it seems like really as far as, you know, not showing up, seen it in other places across Major League Soccer. It's been a big storyline. I always get a little bit wary when it comes down to those like one-on-one interactions or, you know, you want to come and like have a real conversation sometimes after the whistle on the sideline. Like that's a little bit makes me nervous as far as maybe the right, is that the right place for those conversations? Mm-hmm. But Sasha, we were talking before about your time abroad and, you know, having some of you know, bus stopped and things like that. So those types of things are, you know, not something I am necessarily admire to or would like to see, but you have to say they care, right? Like at a minimum, they care. They care in the good times. And then obviously now you see a lot of these clubs right now when they're struggling, they're making their voices heard as well.
I think that's the most important thing, Kalen, that you said is that they care. So these fans, and I met lots of fans when I played for Anderlecht that had the Anderlecht tattoo or like they said, I've been a season ticket holder since I was 5 years old with my dad. So this is their entire life and they work all week to afford that season ticket for the weekend. And if they start to feel that they care more about the club than the players do, then that becomes a problem. And so not that I ever loved these interactions with fans where, you know, we lost a game on the road at Standard Liège and the fans barricaded our bus and they wouldn't let us drive back to Brussels until we got off the bus and let them be heard and let them voice their frustration. That's not fun. I was my harshest critic. I knew if I didn't play well, I knew if we lost 5-1 on the road to our biggest rivals, that was bad. Like I knew that and I knew it had to be better the next week, but you let them voice their frustration and you try to do your best the next week. Of course, I agree with you that we don't want to see in these heat of the moment arguments where maybe something gets physical or becomes dangerous for the players. No one wants to see that. But I do like that we are seeing the fans that care. They're raising expectations in their club that they expect and expect results, but also expect performances, especially when you play at home, which is cool to see. We've always said the regular season in MLS needs to mean more, right? It needs to mean more. Well, to these fans, it's starting to mean a lot more.
Yeah. And the other thing to note is a lot of these fans have been there a lot longer than the players. So, you know, you talk about holding the standard. They're saying, hey, this is what we're expecting. And sometimes you don't see that in the locker room. And that's where you see some of that real frustration. I felt that way for a long time with Chicago Fire supporters of like, if you've been around for the good times, you're still there, even through the bad times. You're just kind of waiting for someone to come back in and reestablish that.
Yeah. Look, and another team to mention is Toronto FC. Things have been a little bit ugly there between the fans and the players. There was a microphone thrown after Canadian Championship game. So that's just a few of the clubs that have had some of these interactions. Moving on to the rest of the results on Wednesday night, we got the Columbus Crew beating Colorado Rapids 3-2. Lucas El Arayan and Cucho Hernandez are cooking. Quietly, Cucho was in a bit of a slump, a bit out of form, wasn't quite hitting the same goals as he was. Look, my takeaway from this game is that it reinforces my belief that Columbus are one of the three absolute most watchable teams in this league for both good reasons, because you got El Arayan cooking. Well, Cucho Hernandez is capable of something special at any moment. They love to play out. They try to play beautiful. They try to play aesthetic. And they're also watchable for the bad reasons. They try to play out when maybe they should be a bit more pragmatic. They're prone to some individual errors in the back. So put that all together, that makes it a lot of fun. And the Colorado Rapids have been in some of these games, though. That is, I believe, their sixth straight loss in all competitions. So things aren't going well there.
That Cucho goal, real quick, was one of my favorite of the weekend. Just because the trust that it took from El Arayan just to give him the ball. Sasha, I'm sure you and Bradley, he's not really open.
No,
right? But
he, the way he made that run with the pace, it was like, you better give me the ball now because this is the one opportunity. And he shoved it into him, and that first touch and finish, that was world class.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite ones of the weekend.
Yep. It's a good duo. Yeah, to continue
not
on.
Necessarily one. A banger, right? We had some bangers.
There were some.
Not necessarily. Yes.
But this was
highly technical, very good striker's space. Finish. Yes, I agree. That's underrated. If you, I guess, if you're not like a,
we're gonna do all star underrated all stars later. This was like our
underrated.
Look at these guys. Look, it wasn't exactly a golazo. You know, you guys are probably looking at Miguel Berry, but me, an intellectual, I really like the Cucho Hernandez goal. Yes. I don't know if you guys watch the game like I do. Yes. I appreciate that, guys.
Tom, that's one. It's not the light beer of goals, or.
Anyway, Toronto FC drew 0-0 at home with Chicago Fire last night. I'm going to go with the glass half full for Toronto FC because I believe and trust in Bob Bradley that he's going to do what it takes to try to get the most out of that group after a very tumultuous, to say the least, week last week. In Toronto FC land and in the locker room. And Insigne had a good game midweek. The team played pretty well last night. They created a lot of chances in the first half. They didn't finish them off, and it comes back to bite them with a 0-0 result. Chicago Fire, sorry, on the other hand, I still think Frank Klopas has to get the most out of Shaqiri, and it's not been good enough from the Chicago Fire.
I know that we're not sticking to one-touch takes, but I'm sitting in the Weeby chair. I have to annoy Anders by continuing to talk when we shouldn't. Roku, what do you think about that system? And they're playing some semblance of a 3-4-1-2, like putting Shaqiri in the center of the pitch and making sure that there are two forwards ahead of him. Again, whether it's a little bit more fluid with the wingers and forwards, whatever. But is that the best way to get the most out of Shaqiri?
I think that's what Shaqiri thinks is the best way to get the most out of Shaqiri. Honestly, Brian Gutierrez should be the starting number 10 on that team.
Wow.
He's been better. He's been more efficient. He's had more goals, more assists, set up more plays. Shaqiri, if you're not producing, sorry, man, go play on the wing. That's my opinion. I know it's tough for Frank Klopas because he stepped in. You have to get your biggest DP to buy in. This is the same thing with Insigne and Bernardeschi for Bob Bradley. So Klopas probably asked Shaqiri, where do you want to play? Where do you want to be on the field? Honestly, to try to get him to buy in the most.
Give him the captain's armband for part of that.
And we've seen some flashes of brilliance from Shaqiri. We've seen a few moments here and there, but it's fleeting. It's a tough one to watch for me. That frustrates me a lot because big name DPs that come to MLS, you have to bring a mentality that this is not going to be an easy league. This is going to be a challenge. You're going to have teammates that are not at the same level that you're used to from playing at Bayern Munich or Liverpool, and you have to adjust to your teammates. And Shaqiri has not shown that mentality.
I agree. And I think Frank is like the right person to at least get something, of course, to impart that passion and to give that to Shaqiri. But for me, it's not going to be consistent. I think we've just seen enough of him that if that's not, you know, consistent already, and suddenly it takes a new manager who asks you how you want to play, who can I put around you? That's where you start to have, for me, it's you're giving up too much to be able to put him in the position he wants to be in. And I agree, especially when you have a young talent like that. It's like, how long is Shaqiri going to be here? Let's develop the young player. Let's pick and choose the moments to bring in Shaqiri to make a difference. But it's hard. You look at that salary list, it's hard to take, you know, as an interim manager to go and say, actually, it's not for me. You're going to be a super sub, like, or to explain that up to ownership. Like, that's difficult.
Yeah.
Impossible. To be fair to Shaqiri, he did have assists in three straight games heading into this 0-0 draw at Toronto FC. Kaelin, Sporting Kansas City 2-1 over FC Dallas.
Yeah, SKC. I mean, they've found their footing. I think they've come back in a big way. I was less negative, let's say, than many were during that. Not so much during the stretch to begin with, because things were bleak, let's be honest. Loss to Montreal at home for me was really a low point. But the way they came back, I thought, found footing. Seattle, I think Vermees brought in, got some guys healthy, started playing better. Then it seemed like they had the regression against St. Louis, but for me, that was not quite so fair, just because they had gone from playing LAFC midweek while St. Louis was rested. Now you see them come back, they get a result in their last one, then they come back again. Now another win against FC Dallas, Shallowy getting goals. But I think Gadi Kinda for me has been when we talk about underrated players. I know he's a designated player as well, but coming back into the team, he's made a big difference, gets the goal on this one, but he just adds an extra number into the box. He's done a really good job of those late arriving runs and gives them something a little bit different. We know they have those wingers that can run and get after guys, but they've needed that sort of late arriving guy coming in from a deeper position. Maybe Sasha Kleshtin-esque. You could say.
Isn't it amazing for Sporting Kansas City how much better they are when they have their best players on the field? Soccer's pretty easy sometimes, guys. If you guys can just get your healthy and best players all on the field at once.
Best ability is available, right?
A lot easier to win games.
Inter Miami lost 1-0 to the New York Red Bulls at home. First thought is that the seat is very, very warm for Phil Neville at Inter Miami. That's another loss. They've fallen down the table. There was Phil Neville out. Banners his post-game press conference, which I think he handled extremely well, to be fair to Phil Neville. It was obviously hostile, obviously bad vibes. The fans were booing Harvey Neville when Harvey Neville got touches, I think out of frustration towards Phil, I'm assuming, rather than Harvey, a backup fullback. And Phil said in a number of different ways, he had a couple of quotes that pushed back a little bit. Look, I think that we've let ourselves down in moments, but we're playing well. But we take full accountability. It's not been good enough. Look, we're going to sit here and take the criticism because it's fair. It's earned. Like, we can't be in a position to push back against it. And a couple other good leadership quotes that he had was to the effect of keep having the banners at me, keep yelling at me, keep criticizing me, leave my boys alone. And not literally his son, but yeah, his boys on the field. I thought that was really cool that he kind of stepped up. He took it on the chin. And again, I don't know. He didn't lash out in the content world. I thought it was going to be a little bit more entertaining and more exciting of a press conference, but honestly, I thought he handled that extremely well in a pretty impossible situation. And a quick thought on the Red Bulls, Peter Schrout. Like, I was on this show all off season saying this kid is legit. He's not the classic homegrown where you're just hoping for a couple minutes or whatever. He's ready to be like a starting level player in this league. Peter Schrout's been awesome. That's my thought.
Awesome. Austin FC gets the home win against Minnesota United 2-1, and the biggest story of the night was the return of Sebastian Driussi. One of my other favorite players in the league, has an unbelievable skill set, just being in the right place at the right time to set up chances, to score chances. Last night was another example of that. A massive goal off a long throw-in, just to grind out a result for Austin FC. The return of Driussi can be a springboard for the rest of the season for this Austin team. Of course, they've dealt with some injuries and, players missing and strikers not scoring goals. But now Zardes had goals in three straight. Driussi is back. Fagunda is back in the lineup. I think things are trending upward for Austin FC. And for Minnesota United, the positive thing I can say about them is that, the last 10 minutes of that game after they got scored on, they did not give up. They did not quit. They stuck in that game. They had some massive chances. And Brad Stuver for Austin FC had some huge saves late on. Minnesota will be around. You cannot kill them off. They stick around.
It's a perfect way to describe
them. Look at their roster right now. You would think there's no way this is a playoff team without Reynoso. And Adrian Heath obviously is doing a very good job of getting the players to believe and getting Kalen's favorite player to we'll talk about him later.
I was like, which Kalen?
Hold it.
I had to think about that.
Longwane.
There it is.
We'll get that later.
We'll talk about him later. But yeah, Minnesota, they got to just start winning their home games.
Yep. And a couple notes on Minnesota. Emmanuel Reynoso is nearing his season debut. Adrian Heath said that they're trying to be cautious with his fitness and not risk him with injury or whatever, but he's getting close to playing.
Well, he's saying he might actually play this week.
Yeah. Yeah. He's close. I don't know if that's a little gamesmanship or maybe we'll see Reynoso this weekend.
A little bit of desperation. He came back into the team. I think he's only practiced 1 or 2 days.
Because a lot of midweek games too. There haven't been regular training sessions.
Exactly. But he's been doing 3-a-days apparently on the side for a while, which is feels like a crash course, like 3-a-days. At a certain point, there's diminishing returns. But
that sounds like Seton Hall soccer back in Touch Questions.
Running beep tests.
Never. Never. We got a ball playing coach, Manny Shellshite, main man. We didn't do fitness.
Yeah.
Fitness from the game.
Actually, I was going to, that takes me back. The Blue Stars, I don't remember a lot of fitness either.
Nah. What? Too many ballers.
Yeah. One more Minnesota United note. Luis Amarillo was not involved in the matchday squad, that DP forward. They were finalizing a deal to send him to Mazatlan in Liga MX. Everything's agreed, being finalized. Nothing done yet. But when it's done, that'll open a DP spot. Timu Puki, that's an option. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks.
Yeah, they need to strengthen that nine. The only thing I would say on the Reynoso thing, last thing, is just I think they got to be pretty careful there because with all of the people missing, Robin Lud going out.
Yep.
You want to push a guy back in just because he has a good couple training sessions, see him scoring goals, the quality. But sometimes you're not quite at your full level when you come off a long break or a injury. But I would come in and sometimes be like, I'm just happy to be out here, that you're buzzing, you're back with the team, scoring goals, and then you hit that dip. Or you, even worse, you get an injury.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big concern as far as, do you rush him back in? They've been able to survive without him. Of course you want to get him, but I think they have to be pretty careful, especially with Lud out, almost because of the injuries, mm-hmm. being maybe even a little bit more cautious. But I don't know. You got a player like Reynoso. He's scoring in training. It's compelling. It's hard not to put him in.
Couple more results to get to. Vancouver Whitecaps 6. Wait, what? 6? Vancouver Whitecaps over Houston Dynamo 6-2. K1 Carr.
Let's skip this one, man.
Yeah, how did we sneak this past him in the pre-show meeting?
Nah, you guys put this one on me on purpose. No, Vancouver, I mean, they can score a bunch of goals. I think we're going to get to games to preview, but I think they play Sporting Kansas City this coming weekend, so I got my eye on that one. I think only 7 shots on target. They had more than that, but 7 on target, 6 goals. Most of them were absolute bangers. Brian White, I think he's led the league in XG for a while, but hasn't actually converted.
New Jersey Mario Gomez, let's go.
Now, yeah, there you go. Does he rock a jumpsuit? Like a velour tracksuit? Yeah.
I'm just going to say yes because it's heritage.
Okay, respect. yeah, him. And then Julian Gressel for me. I had questions about the way they were using, Sartini was using him at first, because he's just so good as that wing back position. Best service in the box for me from wide areas. And so I was confused to say, okay, you're putting him more as an 8 here. But it reminded me a little bit of the way we used Brad Davis in Houston later on in his career. It was just so good that you're almost wasting him in the middle. But I think he's their best player as with the ball in possession. Mm-hmm. So they sometimes drag him out wide, allow him to kind of float and drift, which has worked quite well. And Houston getting a red card on the road. I think they've conceded 18 goals so far this season. 16 of them have been on the road, which on the positive means the home form has been very good.
They're going to win their home games. And they've proven that. And you can go pretty far in MLS by just winning your
home
games.
That's a playoff team if you do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's pretty much their level.
Sasha Kletcher, bring us home.
Sorry. Shout out Sebastian Berhalter. That first goal of his career. Yes. You're never going to score another goal, kid, like that in your entire career. The best goal of your career was your first goal.
I love it.
Congratulations. Yeah. That was awesome.
I thought Sasha was saying you're never going to score another goal, kid. Like, enjoy it. No. Like, Jesus, man. That's pretty tough.
It's nice to have your first goal be a heat check, though. I like that. All right. Personality.
Sasha, bring us home. Seattle Sounders lose 1-0 to San Jose at home.
Sounders losing, I think, 3 of their last 4 at home, yet still remain atop the Western Conference standing. They would be, honestly, a huge challenger for the Supporters' Shield had they just taken care of business against these teams at home that have all been below them in the table and below the playoff line. San Jose Earthquakes, though, a very professional performance, very good. The team has found real good guidance under Luchi Gonzalez. I like the style of play. I think adding Grueso and adding Jonathan Mensah to the spine of that team has done a lot. And honestly, I've been yearning for Cade Cowell to get to the Under-20 World Cup, to be playing against boys and to dominate them. And now he's got 3 goals in 3 games. Honestly, now bring that confidence back to MLS and think about how good this team can be with, you know, Jeremy up front and Christian Espinoza on the right, and a productive Cade Cowell, because he's not been productive yet this season.
No, but we're bringing that confidence over to Europe. And
yeah, possible. I mean, honestly, there's going to be transfer saga around him for sure. But the Earthquakes, I like what I'm seeing out of them. It's not a fluke that they are where they are in the table right now. So, and then one last thing about Seattle Sounders. Sorry. This has just this last, like, month has really underlined the importance of Christian Roldan to this team for me. Every little thing he does during the game, I think, really permeates throughout that group. Like, he fights for every second ball. He runs behind the defense to stretch the defense. He'll win every duel. He'll win 50-50 balls. And they've just lacked something in the past month. And you know, apparently he's back in training and could play this weekend. So it would be a huge, huge get to get Christian Roldan back to Seattle Sounders.
Yeah, they really struggled in his absence. One other MLS team was involved last night that we haven't talked about. Perhaps one of the biggest games, the CCL Leg 1 Final. LAFC traveled down to Mexico to play Club Leon in Leg 1. They lost 2-1, and
No. They won 2-1.
Won 2-1. I think that's a better way of putting it because Lyon,
late winner.
Lyon took it to them, man. Lyon ended up going up 2-0, and they seemed much more likely to score third to kind of kill the game off. They did score third. That was called back on the field for a foul. Look, LAFC were... I haven't seen them like this in an MLS game for a while where they were absolutely being suffocated. It wasn't just that Lyon were kind of out shooting them. They were where they got their shots. They seemed to be able to do whatever they wanted, dragging defenders around. Ryan Hollingshead, one of the best right backs in the league. He struggled. Diego Palacios was being kind of run up and down the wings. Like the way that Lyon both pressed and put LAFC under pressure pretty immediately and constantly throughout that game, even 2-0 felt like could have been much worse. This tie maybe could have been over. And then deep into stoppage time, the 6 minute of stoppage time, who else but Denny Bouanga coming up to score a goal to give them a goal, taking that deficit to 2-1. Away goals do not count as the tiebreaker in the CCL final. They counted in every other round in the CCL. This feels like a very CONCACAF thing, but just again, just a reminder, it's 2-1. If it ends tied after leg two this Sunday in Los Angeles, it will go to penalties. But again, Denny Bouanga leading MLS in the Golden Boot race, leading the CONCACAF Champions League Golden Boot race. He's played LAFC games one day while returning from Gabon international duty. This guy's a cyborg. Despite how many minutes he's played, he still looks like the most fit, the fastest, strongest player on the field, comes up and scores with a huge goal.
Did you just say Denny Bouanga was Simon Borg?
A cyborg. Shout out Simon Borg, though. That's
same energy. Yeah.
Honestly, losing that game 2-1 is like a victory based on how that game went. There were chances, like you said, Hollingshead and Palacios getting run over. But to get out of there with 2-1 is such a positive result to take back to LA. McCarthy, special shout out. Goalkeeper Don McCarthy was massive, made some big saves. And Denny Bouanga is just dominating MLS, dominating CONCACAF Champions League. And I think the edge now tilts to LAFC as they go home.
Yeah, Kaelin, what did you make of the game, and what do you make of how they set up kind of for leg two?
Well, we so rarely see a team impose their will on LAFC. And Palacios and Hollingshead, for me, are more dangerous. You always see them bombing forward. And so if you can turn them around and just turn them into strictly defenders and just continue to put wave after wave, they'll take risks. So the 1-2 is pretty simple combination plays that we're getting around them and finding that space there. And from there, your back line is kind of scrambling. So I thought the plan from Lyon tactically was pretty good and got it at them in some places that they needed to. The other part of it, though, was just the way that I've seen. You mentioned McCarthy, the way he comes up with big saves, big time. You know, we've seen big games, he almost gets better, finds another level. And that's what I keep seeing from this LAFC team. I remember in our preview, we were talking, and I just think back to MLS Cup, the way they take a blow, they come back. You think again in CCL in the semifinal against Philadelphia Union, they concede leg one, and immediately Kellen Acosta comes back and gets the one on the road, which for me decided the tie there before they came back home. So again, it happens. Bouanga gets the late one. They had to survive. I thought, I was like, oh, I think this might be it. But that's kind of the point when LAFC, they don't feel that way. They continue to find a way. And I agree. I think they're in a really good spot coming home for the second leg.
A couple of notes here is that Jesus Murillo, LAFC, I think their best center back or definitely a starting center back, missed it through yellow card suspension, I believe, and Kellen Acosta missed with an injury. Kellen Acosta is not on the United States Nations League roster, which they said out of an abundance of confidence, of caution, they're not going to call him in. So that would put his status in doubt for Sunday. Who knows? We'll see. Again, Kaelin, what do you make going forward on Sunday? Again, this is a Wednesday-Sunday thing. I don't believe this is normally how CCL have done the finals, but so we kind of get to decide this trophy in a few days here.
Well, you know, one just can't be understated how difficult it is to go to Mexico. I've just had flashbacks, never to the CCL final. I never even sniffed anything close to that. But playing Champions League down there, playing even anywhere around in Champions League, is just so difficult with the crowd against you, the environment. You're not in your comfort zone at all. I mean, this LAFC team has more experience. I felt definitely overwhelmed, even against the referees at times. But I think this team, if you can get through that, just coming back home now, they're going to have that crowd. We saw how that's been able to lift them 2 trophies in the past. So I think they're going to feel that confidence too, especially just coming off the way that game ended. They've been able to rest a little bit, rotate. I talked about the way they got out of Open Cup. MLS has worked around the schedule so they can give their best account of themselves. I think that's where the last 5-10 minutes of a match, that's where we've seen maybe teams drop off, like Toronto or Montreal.
6,000 feet altitude.
Seattle, or well. Not Seattle. They did the opposite. Salt Lake, like that's where we've seen teams maybe struggle, where late in matches, leg one, or at home where you think everything lines up for you. And I think this team is set up a little bit different, and also I think has a lot more experience.
There are two things for me that go LAFC's way is to remember back to 2020 CONCACAF Champions League. They played Lyon. They played away first. They lost 2-0. They went back home and they won 3-0 to win that tie. So they've got history on their side. They'll have that feeling. Granted, these are two different teams now, but Carlos Vela was there, and I'm sure he'll remind the guys of that. And the other is what Kalen said, that as the game goes on, late in games, LAFC has shown the ability to get late winners in front of the 32-52. It's just like it's become a thing. Gareth Bale did it in MLS Cup to get that 3-3. Carlos Vela did it a couple weeks ago against the San Jose Earthquakes. As long as they are in that game and they just need one goal, I give LAFC the edge because they can create something out of nothing, and most likely it's going to be Buonga.
And again, deep into stoppage time for a player who's played as many minutes as he has, 6,000 feet of altitude, steps up with a huge goal, which again, like we joked about it, but it felt like they came out of this with a win. Like Lyon probably went to the dressing room and was extremely disappointed with how it ended. And they played a phenomenal game. They dominated.
And none of that matters.
None of that matters.
None of that matters. That's honestly, that game could have been 4-0 and it could have been over. But, you know, a few missed chances from Lyon, a dodgy referee call to take back the 3-0.
You thought that was dodgy?
I don't think that was a foul.
I thought that was pretty clearly a foul.
No, I think the attacker timed the header perfectly, jumped way over the defender. Honestly, I would be furious, but I'm excited because we've got a game on our hands. But on it, yes,
you need a couple of bounces. Like
you
that.
Do. You need those bounces. And there were some big close chances that the striker didn't connect fully on. And McCarthy made the save that he had to make to keep them in the game. And honestly, as good as Lyon played, none of that matters because LAFC is going back home. And I think they'll be full of confidence and be relentless in attack like they have every game at home this season.
Yeah, these big moments that this team has stepped up in. You talked about how late in games, like I think that they're built for this. I'm pretty confident I know how this usually goes in CCL for MLS clubs, but
if Lyon also are coming in protecting a lead too, that does allow those fullbacks to get more in the attack, and that's the big difference where they were pinned back, having to absorb pressure. Now you see the other side. I would imagine LAFC would stick with the both of them, just with how much they bring going forward. Holling said it's been so underrated for so long. Mm-hmm.
Hollingshead has the ability to come up with a big goal.
Yeah,
too.
Set pieces, even like anything around the box. And then Palacio's service. We mentioned that Gareth Bale goal, right? I think it's his service, the one that brings it over to him. So
will be interesting to see tactically what Cherundolo does if they eventually take the lead. Mm. If then he maybe makes some more defensive substitutions, brings on maybe an extra center back or something like that.
Well, this will be a great game to watch. Leg two, LAFC hosting Club Leon Sunday, 9 p.m. on Eastern on FS1 and Tijuana. Tune in, and we'll see if we have the second MLS team to ever win CCL. Moving on to sticking within MLS. We are almost halfway through.
What's Weeby going to do if that happens? I need to know what Weeby's going to do. I was with him.
We need the GIF.
The first time. Yeah, we got to. I'm not going to be there for
I was going to say, why aren't you guys
on vacation this weekend?
He is.
I don't know how. I thought that would have been
reaction on,
red line.
I saw him at 360 last night. His reaction on that was class. He was hyped.
Yeah.
He was like he was in
understatement.
Lyon. Yeah. It looked like he was there.
All-star voting. Voting is now open for the 2023 MLS All-Star Game presented by Target. Voting closes at midnight Pacific time on June 14th. The fan vote will help select 12 of the 26 players on the All-Star roster. The All-Star roster will be announced in late June. You can go to MLSsoccer.com to cast your vote. Everybody, this is All-Star ballot season. I know Weeby would love if we did a list where we all just did our starting 11s and 18 players on the bench and just kind of drone on name by name by name by name by name. But we have decided, without Weeby's tyranny here, that we can do whatever the heck we want. So we're going to do our, you know, first name on the ballot and argue why that player should be the first name. And then we're going to go for some deeper cuts. So Sasha, you start us off. Who's the first name on your All-Star ballot?
The first name is obvious. It's the 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025 MLS MVP, Hani Mukhtar. He's been the best player in the league this season, the most pivotal player, and honestly, one of the most fun to watch as well when he gets out on the counterattack. You know, Hany Mukhtar can pretty much guarantee will be in Washington, D.C., probably in the starting lineup of this All-Star game against Arsenal.
He better be in the starting lineup.
He's got to be. No. I'm going to go with the, we had this kind of debate already today, so it was a preview, but Lucho Acosta, for me, I'd be interested to see how you put all these pieces together. That'll be Wayne Rooney's problem, but Acosta for me, I mean, just the way he connects, even especially in an All-Star environment, I would imagine, like, he doesn't necessarily need, he just connects so well with other players. He's going to put other people in good spots. That's what we've seen him do with Cincinnati all season. He's been incredible for him, has the eye for the spectacular, and then just the way he is, just how small he is, gives him an advantage in a way, because he's just able to kind of like get out of situations. He has no business doing it. It's just impossible to track him. Ends up in all these different positions. So yeah, he's kind of the obvious one, first one for me.
I'm here for Short King season, so I'm very happy that you brought that up. Thank you. For me, it's Denny Bwanga. We just went long about him. But look, I'll repeat. I think he's a robot. I don't understand how a human being can operate at this level of physicality without showing any sign of fatigue. He's been scoring goals, right foot, left foot. Him in open space, you know, Hany Mukhtar is the 1A in this league of most excitement in open space. Denny Bwanga is right there with him, man. Like, terrifying for fullbacks. We go back to that second leg against the Philadelphia Union. Olivier Mbiazo, who has been really, really good this year, he got sent off because you know how fast he is. You know how quick, how tricky everything that Denny Bwanga is. And still, you don't really know in the moment because you can't understand how quickly he gets to these balls and how quickly he can turn you and get going. So Denny Bwanga is an absolute nightmare. For me, he's the first name on the MVP ballot. The All-Star ballot.
Ooh.
Freudian slip there.
Ooh. All right. And now we're all going to...
Hold on. We do have to mention Thiago Almada in this.
Okay,
who else would be even in this discussion? Because I think that we got the three names correct. But there's Thiago Almada, Georgios Giakoumakis.
I think Christian Espinoza has to be an All-Star. Yep. He's been playing at an MVP level.
Benteke in D.C.
Yep.
We just named like seven strikers.
Yeah, that's the All-Star game.
Happen. They're going to play a 4-2-4 in the first half and
two center backs. And yeah, we're going to have a classic instead of the super draft winger who becomes a fullback. We're going to have some DP wingers maybe have to play fullback to make up the numbers because we're all about the attack here,
baby. You know, the All-Star goalie is going to be actually, I think it's a good debate right now.
What do you got?
Roman Berkey, honestly, was my pick. He's been good, but there's been, you know, Petrovic is fantastic.
Petro, yeah.
There's been some good ones across the league, and it's like, I don't know if there's one that has stood out head and shoulders above everybody else.
Joe Willis is up there, but I think probably will be punished based on profile and maybe the system that he plays in, but
Stefan Fry's got 8 shutouts on the season.
A lot of good names.
Yeah.
All right. So for deep cuts, Sasha Kljestan, who's your kind of under the radar guy that should be on this ballot?
My under the radar guy is Alvaro Barreal, the left wing back for FC Cincinnati, creating chances at an absurd number for a defender. That's like the Kai Wagner of last season, you know, 15 assists. You know, wouldn't be surprised to see Barreal get to double digit assists and then standing over a free kick when you've got Lucho Acosta on your team and then just taking it with the left and banging it in the top corner. This guy has been super fun to watch. I think he's got to be an All-Star this year.
Kevin Carr.
I really like that one. Barreal has been amazing. I'm going to go with Bongo Kuhle Langwane. Did you catch that?
That was good. Give us that one more time.
Bongo Kuhle Langwane. Callum Williams will be proud of me. I've been training.
He's been putting the back of your throat is
good. Yeah. No, I mean, South African player, Minnesota United. We mentioned before, just, you know, no Reynoso, no Robin Lud. Fragapane has no goals this season. Like, it really hasn't been. Luis Amaria is about to be moved, hasn't been able to contribute yet. Minnesota United, 7th in the West. So credit to them. I think they've been much better on the road. And they've needed an outlet. And he's been the one in transition. But it hasn't just been, you know, his pace or his ability to get him behind or anything like that. He's helped in possession. He's helped allow them to break pressure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, each one of those goals have counted. He's even done it in Open Cup as well. So he's been tremendous. And a player, you know, a lot of people, we do talk about all the big stars. We want to see the big stars in this match. It's an exhibition. But when we get to these deeper cuts, I as always cared about guys getting recognized. I would have loved to have been an All-Star at some point. I'm sure Sasha, how many did you get? Rubbed in? 2? Okay.
That doesn't feel like enough.
But I mean, look.
I only got to play in one. I missed the first one because of the Olympic Games.
Where were they, the two?
2008 was in Toronto. Didn't get to go. And then 2000.
Whoa. You were an All-Star once with the Red Bulls?
Once, yeah.
How's that possible?
Was that at Red Bull Arena?
No, I played in the 2016 game at San Jose Earthquake Stadium against Arsenal.
Yeah.
And I got to say, that was such a fun, like, short week. Just playing in, like, rondos with, like, Kaká and David Villa and Pirlo and Giovinco. And then I was the lucky one.
That's not an easy midfield to get into.
No. But you know what was super fun was because of wacky MLS scheduling back then, the game was on a Wednesday and NYCFC had a game on Friday. So Pirlo started the game and I subbed in the 30th minute so that him and David Villa could go catch a private plane back to LA that night or back to New York that night. So I got to play in the first half and I got to play in the second half. So I got to play with everybody on the roster, which most players don't get to do. So that was pretty cool. Like in the first half, I helped set up the goal that Drogba scored. And then in the second half, I got to play with Giovinco and Nacho Piatti and all these other guys. So it was that was an awesome experience. It was really fun.
Oh, unfortunately, you guys lost. I just had to look that up to double.
We did. We lost 2-1.
And then one
get them back this summer for you.
So yeah, All Stars are playing against Arsenal this year in DC. But my kind of deeper cut, we have not mentioned a defender yet because I don't know if I count Alvaro Barrial as a defender with this for these purposes. Jack Mayer, Nashville SC center back. He's been really great. Nashville. Up and down the organization have been talking about how highly they think of Jack Mayer since they drafted him, since he started getting into the first team and playing more regular minutes last year. And this year he's kind of stepped up, even with Walker Zimmerman missing some time. He's been really, really good. He's why they were okay with trading Dave Romney. They were playing kind of three at the back a lot last year. So Mayer, Zimmerman, and Romney were playing together. Now this year, he's clearly a very, very good MLS center back. And that's been, you know, a lot of fun to watch him play. And it's nice that we mentioned a defender here. Some other deep cuts. I don't know. Everybody on St. Louis that isn't, you know, Lovin or Klaus, because those are their air quote big names at Berkey or whatever.
You can't say the team is the star and then demand all the all-stars.
Demand all of them.
The team is the all-star.
The team is the all-star.
Designated all-stars.
I think Berkey's a really good shout for being in that.
Any more deeper cuts? DeJuan Jones. I'm trying to think of kind of defenders. Like DeJuan Jones, where New England is.
Yeah, I love DeJuan Jones. Yeah. I think he's so key to what New England does. It'd be nice to see him get some praise and some love. I love the Jack Mayer because Walker Zimmerman will always get the plaudits. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be his team, his back line. But in the games that he missed, the defense did not miss a beat, and that's because Mayer was able to step up and be that leader on the back line.
Take out a three-time MLS Defender of the Year out of most teams and tell me how that back line's going to look.
Yeah.
That you'd be making excuses, most managers, and credit to Nashville, and Mayer has been really good.
Some other guys, Kosi Tefari for FC Dallas. Vancouver have a lot of, like, Julian Gressel. I'm not sure if that he's technically under the radar, but I would like to say his name. I think he's been really great for Vancouver. They're going to be a lot. That 26-man roster is going to be really difficult. And again, it's going to inevitably be filled with a lot of number 10s and a lot of center forwards. So hopefully there's a few defensive midfielders.
Tolkien's great. Yep. Love John Tolkien. Wobodo in Cincinnati, you know, he's a designated player. Defensive midfielders just don't get a lot of love. And honestly, Dax McCarty has still been good for Nashville SC. And, you know, don't know if this is Dax's last season in MLS or not, but if it might be, Don Garber. Yeah.
I love that.
Commissioner's pick, please,
Sasha's
for Dax McCarty.
Just picking up straight up the middle, the whole heart of Nashville.
What's Lloyd Sam up to right now? Do you think he should be in the All-Star game? You guys can come out of retirement?
Don't disrespect Dax like that.
Dax, I mean, we've seen this in the past, even with, like, I think Raimondo came in, commissioner's pick. Sean Johnson's deserved it. He should be in. He's been overlooked for a while. So I think I like the pick of, it's not just about necessarily, you know, I don't know. You want some personality as well too. And for that point, I would also throw Kai Kamara in the list because Orange County Blue Star legend, as we've mentioned. But no, I mean, going chasing down the all-time record, just tremendous form. He's been really good. Character, personality would, you know, to me, big star, probably should be putting more of Kai forward. And in my opinion, I felt that way for a long time about his sort of profile within the league. I think it's been difficult because he's moved teams so many times. But, you know, always, Kai's always an all-star for me.
Yeah, on that point, it is cool to see when the history is recognized. You know, the NBA, I think, is the best league at recognizing their history and kind of promoting it. So, you know, Wando got a commissioner's addition, I believe, in his final season, the All-Star game. So the Dax McCarty has a great shout. Kai Kamara's.
I like that we weren't planning on doing the commish. We went deep. We started picking for the commish.
All right. And a reminder, you can go to MLSsoccer.com to cast your vote. All right. A couple more before we let you go. Here, let's talk about the U.S. national team roster. The Nations League came out this morning. Some big takeaways. I'm not going to read the roster and drone on here, but Balogun is on it for the first time. He filed his one-time switch from England. Some other fun names. I think Josh Cohen, he's probably the American you might not know. He's got 3 league titles in Israel. He won Player of the Year in Israel. He's played in the Champions League. Drake Callender is on the roster as well from Inter Miami. What else do we got here that you guys want to talk about? Gio Reyna's back. Brendan Aaronson. Zach Steffen's out with an injury. Ricardo Pepi, Taylor Booth. Any big names that you guys want to hit?
I got a couple of names that were not named to the snubs. Roster. A couple of snubs that I feel bad for. Jesus Ferreira, one. Just still getting goals for FC Dallas.
But Gold Cup. So Gold Cup is, that's where it's difficult for me for, you know, I know that this is a domestic and European, so it's not quite the split that March and April were, but I would like to hear more. I know that they did a press conference with interim manager BJ Callahan, and whether he talked about this or not, I haven't seen, but I don't know what went into the thinking of maybe, all right, we'll leave Jesus here and maybe the Gold Cup. But again, that's a good point.
Sure. One, and the other, Mark McKenzie, center back for Genk, having scoring an awesome goals. Season, scoring goals like crazy lately in the playoffs. They have their final game of the season on Sunday where they potentially can still win the title if one other result goes their way. What's he got to do to get in this team? I feel bad for him, especially in a game against Mexico. If we remember the last Nations League final, it came from a goal from Miles Robinson off a set piece. And Mark has been in form scoring goals from the back right now off set pieces. And just to reward him for what he's done for this entire season, you know, Genk had been in the lead in the Belgian league for mostly the entire season. He's been very solid. So I feel for those two guys, but hopefully we do see them in the Gold Cup.
What do you think, Kaywin? Any thoughts?
No, I mean, I feel for Mark, same thing, just because he's been left off at times where maybe his form hasn't been there, and you can accept that. But then when you're flying high, that's when you want to see it. And maybe that's where some of the continuity or the changes in U.S. soccer of managers comes in, where you don't really have that relationship to say, well, you left me off here, now why am I not back in it? So, but yeah, I was disappointed to see it from Mark. But one thing I know about him is he's always responded whenever he's had a moment where he's gotten knocked down, or even in moments with the national team where he's made mistakes, he's always bounced back, and I'd expect him to do the same.
Yeah, agreed. And look, Falaron Balogun can make his debut for the United States against Mexico 2 weeks from today, June 15th, in the semifinals of the Nations League. What a moment that could be. Any other thoughts on the national team here? We're good? I think we chewed that bone.
Yeah, we got it.
We're going to move on. Extra Time's Match Day 17, matches to watch. You can watch all the games on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Sasha Kljestan, kick us off.
What some would call the greatest rivalry in MLS, I would absolutely not call it that. But Seattle Sounders against Portland Timbers is a massive match. This is a match that has history that goes back almost 50 years. And bizarrely enough, Portland Timbers have dominated the last 4 games in this series, winning all 4, and Seattle Sounders losing 3 of their last 4 at home. It's a weird spot for these two teams to match up right now, but it's a massive match. And Brian Schmetzer has said publicly recently, Seattle Sounders need to start realizing that these are rivalry games. This is not just any other MLS game. You know, I see guys shaking hands with the Portland Timbers after the game and giving them hugs, and they need to remember like the history of this game. So I would guess that he will have those guys fired up, the mentality good, to be physically ready, emotionally ready for an absolute battle with the Portland Timbers. And kind of cool thing, it's a doubleheader with the Rain and the Portland Thorns. So you have a women's game as well. Doubleheader. If you get a ticket to one game, you get a ticket to both. That place will be loud and packed and bumping. And I'm very excited for that match.
Yeah, that'll be fun in terms of lining up those rivalry games. Looking forward to that. Kaywin Carr, where in the world are you this weekend?
Well, I like that. I like the Sounders when Rui Diaz missed a couple of big chances. You imagine him. He's been a killer against Portland in the past, so not a bad bounce back game for him. I am going to Philly. Philly against Montreal. Montreal, it's a tricky one for them because they're coming off this amazing result, have this momentum, coming back against DC United. Hernan Losada, his old club. Last week before that, they had Duke and Lazio going against their old club, so they've been kind of riding off this high for the team, but now going to Philly when Philly is, you know, the wrong time to meet them, focusing on the league where I think Montreal will be interested to see what they do with this lineup, especially because they have the Canadian Championship final on Wednesday coming up in Vancouver, who are flying high. And so they have to be careful. Camacho came out hurt, and they need to figure out exactly who's available. And I could see them actually rotating a little bit and resting, which could go even better for Philadelphia. But that said, momentum for Montreal. So I'll be watching that one.
Looking forward to that. Hearing you on the call. For me, it's a deep cut here. Vancouver Whitecaps are supporting Kansas City. We spoke about this already, how Vancouver won 6-2. They've quietly been playing some really good soccer after a slow start. I think it threw some folks off their scent. They've been playing in a lot of fun games. Again, Julian Gressel, the little kind of tactical fluidity of playing central midfield, but trying to drift wide to utilize his elite crossing ability and get into the box, score some more goals. That's been a lot of fun. Of course, my guy, Brian White, New Jersey, Mario Gomez, as we've already said on the show, they're hosting Sporting Kansas City, and Sporting Kansas City have turned it around recently. Again, like Sasha said, Pulido and Gadi Kinda are healthy. They're playing better. Daniel Shawi, you know, they still have a few more injuries. Johnny Russell's out for a few weeks, but I'm expecting that game to be pretty fun. Now, onto the mailbag. We're going to let you go. I think this is my favorite part of the show. I would have led it, but, you know, Anders calls the shots. Sean Hardgrove asked us.
You can still take it back. This is your chance.
Sean Hardgrove asked on Twitter, what's your 7-a-side team featuring only MLS/Apple Media members? And who do you trust to manage? I want to tell you, Sasha didn't. Sasha is going to give his answer pretty quickly. Kalen Carr has prepped for this like it was a midweek match. It was beautiful to watch, and I enjoyed every second of it. Sasha has a quicker answer. So, Sasha, who's your 7-a-side team featuring only MLS Apple Media members?
Okay, so you got to start up front, my guy Bradley Wright Phillips, and I'm going to play right underneath him, and then just throw like five other people randomly onto the field with us to do a bunch of dirty work, and we'll win the championship, whatever the championship is.
So. Lloyd Sam erasure. I'm sure he's upset about this to hear that.
Lloyd's not bad. Lloyd could be like the manager of the team. He's like very get well to play dressed. With you guys. He's got the cross earring dangling down like he's Michael Irvin. God, Lloyd Sam's a legend.
I'm honestly just kidding. Him, Grella, yourself.
Honestly,
Sasha.
No. Kalen, you'd be in my team.
What about Shep? Is Shep
Shep's got to be there.
Shep for the stories would just be like the social liaison.
Coach, manager? Shep as a manager, honestly, that'd be great vibes.
I would step back. I would say you got to get Diego Valeri up there, Bradley Wright Phillips, all like play on a wing if I have to. Kalen, sorry, you got to play right wing. Nigel Rios.
He's just happy not to be fullback.
You just said all the running. You just said it's you and Brad and everybody else has to do all the running. So
that's
not the most compelling pitch to join this club.
Do you want to win or do you want to be the star of the show, Kalen?
I mean, I've definitely transitioned to the luxury phase of my career, finally, which after doing all the running for Brian Ching.
Kalen, who are some thoughts that you got?
Man, this is tough because there's a ton of talent. I started thinking a little bit about the personalities, the way we could fit them together. I've got really cerebral with it. So I was like, Sasha and Kalen Kyle, they're together every Saturday. Maybe we want to see if they can sort it out on the pitch. Who gets the ball more? Who's doing the running? How do they balance each other as the other team attacks? But that she didn't end up making my team. I'm sorry, Kalen. Because I feel like my team, you know, she's tough defender. Like I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but it's a tough lineup. And she didn't quite crack it. So I'm going with, I'm actually just canceling people out. First, I had Heath Pierce, but actually played men's league with Heath. And he's the one who called me a luxury player because I didn't track back. So this is my chance.
Heath's hip is not what it used to be either. Wait, do you have a formation or do you just have the names listed?
That's the part of the problem with Heath and I was he was like, what position are you playing?
And so that's why Kalen Kyle would be great. You just stick, you know that you have a defender there. And at these teams, particularly with some of the names, you got Diego Valeri, Sasha Kleshin, Kalen Carr, Bradley Wright Phillips. Yeah. I think you need to load up on defenders.
Okay. So I hate to do this to him, but I'm gonna take Mo Adu and I'm going to put him
center back.
As a center back.
I always told Mo he was a much better center back than he was a midfielder.
I won't say it to him, but.
Say it to him.
We'll put him back there. No. He can move forward in the attack. I was going through the list of defenders. There's some good ones. Miola. I'm going with Danielle Slayton. I think we just need Danielle bring a little bit of that composure to the back line, help distribute from there. And then I thought about Taylor up top, but then I realized we're not going to get him the service he needs. So I went with actually Carlos Ruiz.
Ooh, nice. Pescadito.
Yeah, because I think sometimes, seven aside, you need somebody who can play the dark arts, figure out, you know, some moments in the match. There's no video review.
No offside, no video review.
This is a perfect platform right there. So I've got him. I'm putting myself. And then last one, I don't even know how many numbers we have left, but Patrice Bernier. I need Patrice. We got to get the French. We got multiple languages.
Yeah.
We're doing it all. And Patrice, for me, was a guy I always wanted to play with. Always respected his game. So, yeah, no Red Bulls, though. That's the key part.
Sorry to go off the rails here. Was there any player in MLS that you always wanted to play with and you never got the chance to? Because I have one that I've always had.
Start us off. I'll come back with one.
I ran into this guy in Soho 2 weeks ago. He was walking around with his family. He was in town to watch his son graduate from NYU. New York Red Bulls legend Juan Pablo Angel.
Oh,
that's a good one.
I gave him a hug. This guy's like 50 years old. I mean, he's not 50. He's probably 45. I gave him a hug, and this like guy fit. Is rock solid.
Yeah.
This dude is a beast.
And get him on the Saturday squad.
He doesn't live here. He lives in Colombia.
Because he scouts for LAFC.
He was just in town to see his son graduate, and his other son is playing at the Under-20 World Cup for Colombia. Mm. Like the starting striker for Colombia.
Decent.
This guy is a legend. I just watched him. I was in college when he played for the New York Red Bulls, mm-hmm. and I just dreamt of like feeding him balls because this guy was just like scoring goals like crazy, making amazing runs, linking up. He was the one guy I wish I got to play with.
You could have had 100 assists instead of 99 if you played with him.
I'll never forget a goal he scored against Chicago when I was there. They squared it across him, and Chris Armas, who was one of the best sixes ever, you know Chris.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
He
already.
Like came across to make a last-ditch tackle, and he just rolled it across in the box, like inside the six, rolls it across him, just taps it in.
Yeah. It made Chris look silly.
I mean, that doesn't happen much, but that was partly why I was so impressed. I was on the pitch and I was just behind it being like, oh, he's in another plane right now. Not pressed. For me, I just thought of it, Dwayne Di Rosario for me. Mm. He was the guy I watched when he was in San Jose and I was growing up there. We got to scrimmage against with my college team a few times then, and we played the first half and it was 0-0. I remember feeling like, I think I'm ready. Like, take me to the league. Let's go. And then they subbed in Dwayne Landon in the second half. And both of them, I think Landon had the most casual hat trick ever. And then Dwayne was just dancing on everybody. And he was the guy, you know, I went to Houston. He was gone by then, but he was the guy I always looked at and was like, oh, I would just love to. He also pulled me aside a few times when I was young, which I always respected. Oh, but yeah, I always got a chance to. Yeah, don't get teary.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful, Caleb. To wrap a bow on the seven aside, I'm certain that we missed some names like Danny Higginbottom, Lori Lindsay, Brian Dunny, you're the legend. There's a lot of talent here. I just have to say, for the non-former professional players category, we got a couple New Jersey D3 players like Tyler Terenz, myself, Liam McHugh, D1. He was a baller back in the day. David Goss is a men's league animal. Kalen Clark.
I played with Goss, yeah.
Andrew Wiebe before his ankle turned into glass, pretty good. We got a lot of players here. Wiebe, I love you.
That's why he doesn't wear socks on the show.
Too fragile. Yeah. Wiebe, we love you. Hope I kept the seat warm.
Right before broadcast.
Kept the seat warm for you, Wiebe. I'm sure you'll be back soon. You can take some swings at us. We had a lot of fun. Look, glad to host. Glad to be with Sasha Kalen Clark. Thanks for listening, everybody, if you stuck around this long.